Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And for the first time in a long time, or since I could ever remember in the history of Force Center, Joseph is out today. He's missed shows before, but usually we rearrange our schedule, we pre-tape, but he is having a great time doing some work. He's creating some art in his hometown, and he'll be back shortly. So, Jen, this is a rarity. I can't remember the last time it was just you and I on the show.
I can't either. I think it might have been, years ago. Had to have been.
I mean, yeah, we've got 10 years under the belt now. So at some point, I'm sure it happened. At some point. Podcast days. The old podcast only days. And as we've joked before, this could have been Jedi Alliance in late 2014. This was my plan. Wow. You and I talked about Star Wars. Pregnant. Well, you already were. That's what we learned.
Oh, that's right. I already was. Yes.
That's great. Well, we're here to talk about questions of the everything. We've got some Star Wars questions, some TV questions, and maybe even some follow-ups. We'll see how we get going here today. Before we dive in, as always, want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Not a little bit later. This is a different format. Right now, we're going to be having our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And we're recommending Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. Probably the last week we recommended, but it's been a great resurgence in popularity for that wonderful book based off of the unproduced Clone Wars scripts by Katie Lucas. Christy Golden wrote a great book with Asajj Ventress, Quinlan Vos. You can check it out if you haven't by downloading your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Help out the show in the process. And Jen, as we always do here, that's not the only A. We've got an ask, and you've got that.
Yes, we have an ask. So we had initially asked for a goal of 400 paid patrons. We met that goal. So now we have a new ask, and that is help us decide on what movie we're going to watch. We're going to do a new commentary. Right now, The Rise of Skywalker is winning. Maybe there are some other contenders. Is it the Phantom Menace that's coming up the rear? Or
We got 25th anniversary Phantom Menace. I surprised, but we already did the Phantom Menace. Mm. We were going to maybe redo it. A Phantom Menace Revisited, 25th anniversary, perfect month for it. But Rise of Skywalker is leading by far.
Okay. Okay. If you want to change that, there is still time. The poll is open on our Patreon page until May 6th at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
It is. It'll be fun to dive into that movie. An interesting journey through episode 9, Rise of Skywalker. If that's it, and we'll be doing that in later May. Also, I will say and add this, not so much an ask, but an update for those who are paid Patreon supporters or those who take a swing through our shop where you can purchase 007 Center's first episode a la carte. Joseph and I did record our look at Quantum of Solace. Great discussion. Been having a lot of fun diving into the Daniel Craig James Bonds with Joseph. So that's exclusive to all paid Patreon members coming very soon. And if you don't want to support regularly on Patreon or whatever the reason is, we totally get it. We're making it available in our shop, so we'll update you that on that soon enough. Before we dive into questions, we always like to catch up with Star Wars or Life Adventures. And, Jen, it was my birthday weekend, and I didn't necessarily have a lot of adventures. I took it easy, relaxed. Had a lot of rum and Cokes and had a great little, not even a party, just a hang at our friend Jen Murrow's house. So, she wrote Force of the Destiny. That's kind of a Star Wars adventure. But I did receive a Star Wars gift. I want to shout out our friend of the show, Ken Plume, host of Force 5 and open a bit of a chat and all those wonderful shows. Check out his stuff on YouTube. He sent me a Return of the Jedi vintage 3 3/4 Moff Jer Jerod figure. I had mentioned this recently, but I did the update. Is I finally found out where I was going to display it. That was the big thing. And it's on a shelf, completely wrapped, not out of package, but it's displayed.
Great. I love it. What a wonderful birthday present.
Yeah, I love being nearly 50 and someone's like, I got the perfect gift for you. 3 3/4 Imperial officer figures. So, yeah, there you go. But that was it. I mean, I'm rewatching The Light and Magic doc.
Yes.
And it's spectacular. But I will admit, once they move out of like the mid-80s, the dress, it's great start to finish, but I'm like, I'll just go back and watch the Star Wars stuff again.
Yes, right. There's just so much information in that section. I feel like every time I watch it, I learn something new or kind of grab onto a new piece of information. But I'm the same way. I keep going back to that section. I'm like, okay, Jurassic Park stuff is fascinating, but
It's great. And the computer age coming and all that stuff. But there's something fun. And also just to see, the growth, it's so amazing from New Hope to Return of the Jedi and beyond. It's well documented, but this just it approaches it in such a warm, wonderful way. So always shout out that doc there as well. So that's that. Well, that was my life. Yours?
It's exciting. Well, I didn't do too many things. The only thing we did yesterday was we went to the Festival of Books, which happens every year at USC, Saturday and Sunday. We went yesterday and we went at like 4:15. It ends at 5. So I didn't know what we were going to find.
Right.
We stumbled upon, you know, when like you're at a festival and you see a group of people all just kind of frantically running around. I wanted to go there. And it turns out you could grab a big cardboard box and fill it with books, whatever books they had, for $25.
Wow.
All sorts of used vintage books. I found tons of Star Wars books. I didn't get them because I had some of them.
I already had them.
A lot of Star Wars origami books, Bounty Hunter guide I saw. But it was madness. And I got so many things that I really need, like the campfire cookbook.
You need that.
Sure.
It's an adventure.
How to grow and eat your own supermas. My husband's like, why are you getting this stuff? Hey,
you know, look outside in the news in the world today. We might all be survivalists soon enough. Be a prepper. Get your superfoods going.
Yeah, this is why I needed to learn about all these different animals.
That's right. Which ones are your friends? Which ones you can eat? Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, all you good. Really learn a lot is about it, yourself.
Is it a free-for-all? Would this book section is just a big pile of books that you're putting in a box? Or is it like a game show? Is it a supermarket sweep?
It felt like that. It was aisles of all these books set up. We couldn't even walk. And with my kids, I'm like, grab it. Wow. And then they had like beautiful. I found a Shakespearean old book, an Edgar Allan Poe book. Awesome. And there were also some textbooks because why not? It is USC after all.
Oh, that's amazing. Do they have like old ones from like the high school days? Like, can I get Churros y Chocolate? The book that almost taught me how to speak Spanish.
I bet you could have found it there. I'm not joking. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Memory. Yeah. It Memories was awesome. Indeed. So that was my adventure with some Star Wars mixed in because it always finds us.
Oh, it does always find us there. It does always find us. Right. Well, let's dive into the questions here. We've got two or more. We got some bonus stuff here. It's going to be fun. Our first question comes today from Justin Jacobson. And Justin writes, great podcasters. I must once again call on your love of that galaxy far, far away. While listening to your breakdown of the Acolyte trailer, the character of Mother Anisea caught my attention. The High Republic previously had a Mother so-and-so, that name is redacted, that turned a peaceful religious group very violent. Grand Admiral Thrawn was assisted by a whole crew of great mothers that lent their magic to the Imperial cause, and none can forget the true Dark Mother of the Imperial era, Edie Karn. I was thinking about Edie this weekend there. That's funny this comes up. As the underachieving goofball son of an awe-inspiring and intimidating mother, I know moms could have a powerful impact on people. Why does Star Wars have so many scary moms lately? Are they trying to balance out Shmi and Padme? Are the creators hinting at some matrilineal Mortis gods we have yet to meet? Or just working through some personal issues and bringing us all along for the Freudian ride? A lot going on there, Jen, and I don't even know where to begin on that.
I love the Freudian angle. That mm-hmm. that is great. So I was thinking about this, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh gosh, there have been a lot of scary moms. But then I also remembered we have Hera recently, who we've seen in live action as a mom. Mon Mothma with her daughter, which was a great dynamic. Interesting.
But great. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Lita.
With a tween. Mm-hmm. Teen. Mm-hmm.
The tween.
And mm-hmm. Marva. I was like, oh, Marva is a wonderful representation of a mother.
Yeah, that's a good counter to that. I know Justin's got a great question here about where they went with some of this stuff. And I, you know, a lot of it, you know, mother energy is very powerful, right? It's as it should be. And I don't just say that to you because you're a mother, you're a daughter of a mother. That's probably where a lot of the experiences come about from this. I definitely don't think it's a counter to Shmi and Padme. Right. I don't think there's some intentional that energy there with that. But how do you look at the, you know, we can start with the ED of it all there, too. The impact of these intimidating mothers, as Justin calls.
I love what I think Edie adds to the story is that you try to understand who is Cyril Karn? Like, what is his motivation? Where does it stem from? And when you see these villains throughout Star Wars, it's like, well, how did they become like this? Right. Here is a perfect example where you see that direct line from his mother berating him and, you know, just putting him down and minimizing his work. That's why he is the way that he is. But there was also something kind of relatable to that for me, who came from a very powerful mother. My mother is a wonderful, wonderful woman. But there are some, you know, threads that you can see.
Absolutely.
So I loved her and that dynamic of them at the table, and it just was a slice of life.
Yeah, and it's a great way to look at the, you know, the genesis of a character. And I don't, you know, Edie comes off as a rather, you know, negative influence, to be clear, at least what we're seeing now. So I don't want to look at anything as a justification for Cyril's actions. But it's when it comes to an understanding and to take that out and maybe put into deeper parts of the galaxy with larger groups, not just Cyril. I have not caught up on phase two of the High Republic. But this mother redacted character, for spoilers for those, you know, it has galaxy wide implications with the stuff she does and who her offspring do become. If I recall the details that I think I know about that. Mm-hmm. So I love using the mother as a way to look at some of the larger impacts in the galaxy. Not that that's I don't want to blame mothers.
Yeah,
I don't want to blame mothers.
But they make an impact on our lives. Our parents or our caretakers, they shape who we are. I listen to all these parenting podcasts and read these parenting blogs, and boy, you can really mess up your kid apparently between the ages of 0 to 5. So
is it you're done? If it's out of after 5, that's it, huh?
Yes, I heard one yesterday. I was like, what? 5? That's it? Okay. They're like, well, you can kind of shape them after that. But you know, 5, they're pretty much formed.
Wow.
So it makes sense that we would get this other side to these characters. It just makes them more interesting and complex.
Yeah, indeed. And we talked a little about the witches in Ahsoka and the use of the Great Mothers, but just, I don't know how, lack of a better term, the witch culture of the Night Sisters of Dathomir, the Night Sisters out and about in the galaxy or in this other galaxy there. Yeah, I know you had a lot of thoughts on that there, but does that, as we move forward with the Great Mothers going into a second season of Ahsoka, what do you expect from them and the motherness of them all? Does that, if that makes sense?
What I really liked about the witches of Dathomir and Mother Talzin back in the day was that they were independent and they had their own motivations and ideas. And yes, they would partner with people and whatnot, but ultimately they were their own. They protected their own. They cared for their own. Yeah. That was my issue with the Ahsoka thing. I didn't really feel like we got to see their personalities shine, which is why I'm excited about Mother Anisea.
Yes.
Because we do know that she does care about her coven's independence, and she's going to do what she needs to do to preserve their beliefs. Does that mean violence? Does that mean, you know, who knows? Does that mean peace? But I'm already fascinated by that character for that reason.
I think a lot of people are, just the use of it and the use of witches in Star Wars that aren't maybe, you know, necessarily directly tied to the Night Sisters, just the way to look at it during that time. And I think having that explored with Leslie Headland and her writing team is going to be interesting. I think it's going to bring a different perspective. Not that the other perspectives in the way it's been executed in Star Wars, the mothers of it all, isn't tremendously valuable. But I don't know. I'm just intrigued by what the use of a witch mother will be like in a Leslie Headland series.
Right. You know what else I was thinking about? I was thinking about, obviously, General Leia as a mom. But the thing about that, let me ask you, like, because of her relationship with Kylo Ren, obviously, who it became, doesn't that make it a little bit more complicated for her character as a mother? Like, I mean,
Yeah. I mean, in terms of just the Han and Leia of it all, right? Getting into parents, I think I've really enjoyed the decision. And this is now even, you know, we're 10 years out of Force Awakens almost, which is crazy. I enjoyed the decision of bringing some realism into Han and Leia. I think it made sense in that it wasn't just simply And, you know, Ben fell to the dark side because power. It was a lot about his status. I've always used example of the pastor's kid who the pressure of being, you know, the offspring of the perfect pastor in the church and all that kind of stuff. It tweaks him a bit. A lot of examples of that through my life that I've been around. And so it was an interesting springboard, which to me, I don't look at it as any sort of ruining the legacy of Han and Leia. It just made them very realistic. And that I loved the Leia kind of having this, you know, I retreat to what I know and I'm a leader and I'm government. I know some people had some thoughts on, Leia kind of giving up the path of the Jedi relatively, you know, easy. I got to go be a mom. I can't be a Jedi, as if you couldn't be both type of thing. I get that. I also like the angle that it was she felt she could help the galaxy a little bit more as a politician and a leader. And that was kind of put out there in the books more than the movies. But I don't know. Yeah, I think in the end, it's such a victory for undying love and compassion and understanding and forgiveness for perhaps herself and her son in the end by Rise of Skywalker. For me.
That's good.
I don't know.
Know what I would love? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No.
I'm going to take us on a different tangent.
My final thought of that. I do love. It's one of the things I enjoy of being able to have a character like Leia continue in Star Wars from Force Awakens into Last Jedi into Rise of Skywalker. They were dealt those cards, and unfortunately, that's the way life took us. But we had what we had in Rise of Skywalker. Is Leia going from the feisty, independent, self-rescuing princess and seeing her? We don't see her become a mother in Star Wars in the EU. Of course, we've spent some time with it. But in some of the extended canon books now, or not extended canon, but the canon books now, we've seen it too. But I love watching her grow over the course of time into a mother in Star Wars. That's been a fun journey.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I would love to see is not, I always was like, oh, it'd be cool to see a mother Jedi, which I know is not really possible, who trains her child. So, but one way I could make it work is having a woman who is a mentor, a female Jedi, mentoring a young girl. I think that would kind of like basically what we see with Obi-Wan and Anakin in the prequels. Take that.
Yeah. And
give that to me now in live action. I feel like that would kind of create this like maternal relationship that I'm really craving in Star Wars.
I think that's a great idea. And you could, this is a wild swing of what we might be getting the accolade, but that maybe they could explore the lack of that, you know, maybe that we'll see where some of the characters go, but I love what you're suggesting there. Star Wars, like so many great myths and pop culture things, has at times had a mother problem, meaning it's the Bambi's mother, right? Right?
Yes.
Mother's here, mother goes, and then starts the story.
Right.
So to have that explored in full would be fascinating. And just in that relationship, even if it's not biological, it's a, you know, almost a mother and daughter relationship by choice or circumstance if it was in the Jedi Order.
Right.
Good. Or just, you know what? Maybe it's a mother who has a later in life career shift, becomes a Jedi. You know, my mom did that. My mom in her mid-40s went back to school, started a whole second career that she retired from. So, you know, maybe I became a Jedi late in life. I went to the community college, became a Jedi, and now I'm going to teach you. I'd love to see that.
I'm going to go even further. I'm going to pitch another movie, Cocoon, but the Jedi version.
With a 52-year-old Wilford Brimley who looks 60 or 70. Yeah.
Right. All the older people, they're like, hey, I've always been force sensitive, but now I got time to train.
Yeah. 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 That's exactly what's suggested. I love that there. Absurd. Yeah. And, you know, Justin's got a great question. You know, why does Star Wars have so many scary moms lately? I don't think he's wrong about that. I mean, Edie Karn just takes the cake on that anyways there. But I love your counter. You counter with it. Like for every Edie, there is a Marva. It's a different situation with Marva, but she's his mother without a doubt. And I thought that's wonderful. What your thoughts on the Mothma Leda of it all. Where do you think that might go? I'm putting you on the spot here with a not necessarily a prediction, but just carrying that out. This great leader with this very realistic, almost Achilles heel right now, a tween at home who also is rebelling by going against your beliefs and wants to become a traditionalist, all that wonderful stuff at play. It's an interesting dangling plot thread for me.
It depends on how she parented her from 0 to 5.
That's it.
No, you know what I do think? I think that Lita's going to rebel, but mm-hmm. it really does kind of depend on how close of a relationship they do have, because mm-hmm. she can come back. I could see her coming back to the good side, yeah. right? Or kind of siding with her father and going away. Basically, when she's probably in her 20s is when she'll come back to the right side of things.
So after
time.
After the Galactic Civil War?
Basically.
I'm so curious because, I mean, we're going to, well, you know what's interesting? I hadn't even, you know, thought about this. You know, Andor season 2, we know is going to do some time jumping. So Mala's in agreement. So we will possibly get to see a little bit of that. You could be right. She could join the Imperial. She could finally come to terms and join her mom in the rebellion after her mother makes that speech that we see in Rebel season 3. That's fascinating. I hadn't spent a lot of time. I think it's a dangling plot thread for me because it is important. Mothma at home, the parent of it all, the lead of it all. I think it's real important, and I'm curious to see how close it's tied to the rise of the rebellion. Lita becomes a general.
Right. And it really amps up the tension for the character of yeah. Mon Mothma, which I love. It's like she's dealing with these, you know, the galactic mm-hmm. politics and all that, which is incredibly heavy stuff. And she's got to deal with her tween to mm-hmm. add another level of stress and not lose her daughter. I think it's just brilliant. And the young actress that plays her daughter is very good, which makes me wonder, ooh, can they give her more of a storyline? And who knows how far they'll take this?
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to look up, I forget who the actress is. It's hard to bring that up. We're doing this on the fly here, but I just typed her name and I forgot her name's Lita Mothma. So that maybe, but it made me realize I was like, I totally never grew. I don't call her Mon. I know, just Mon
that's
Mothma.
True. Yeah.
that just threw me for a second. That's amazing. That's awesome. Bronte Carmichael. She's wonderful. Bronte Carmichael. That's a great. Mm. Just wanted to give her the credit there for being there. All right. Any final thoughts here on mothers? Mothers yet to come in Star Wars. I love what you've pitched of a Jedi mother, a literal Jedi mother. And, they played around with that a little bit in the Dooku and the Count Dooku audiobook, which I famously missed. There was a whole, but you this is when you were out, Jen. Adding to your resume as a mother, we listened and reviewed the Dooku audiobook, and I tune out often. I go for walks, and I was listening to the book, and there was an entire subplot where a female Jedi gets secretly like pregnant and has a kid. And I was like, I didn't hear that. That's all I ever got.
You and I are the same.
I just put it in my ears, and then I go for a nice walk. Next thing you know, I'm thinking, I need to get some eggs, some coffee creamer.
There you go. Oh my gosh. Well, I guess I better listen to that or read the book. To Justin's point, you know, I think that having more scary moms in Star Wars is progress, because I don't want to just see the Shmis or the Amperus who are just there to, you know, be making mm-hmm. lunch or send their kids off away to become become heroes or villains. So I like having a diversity of moms in Star Wars. And I think that we're just getting Star Wars. So we're just getting Star Warded.
That's okay.
Great characters.
I couldn't say matronly earlier, so we're having a Monday morning here. I finished my coffee. I don't know what's happening. With what we do get, my final thought on some of that is with what we do get with like the Shmi stuff. Some of my favorite stuff in Star Wars is Shmi and the Phantom Menace, though it is exactly what you're talking about. It's like her big moment of strength, her big moment of action and victory is to let him go, and that's it. We'll see you later when you're dead. So I'd like to... build on the stuff that is positive and is there and find other ways to explore it. And I think in more Star Wars storytelling, we will get that. I hope.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Justin, yes. Great question there. We appreciate a swing through that. We are going to take a quick break. But on the other side, we got some other center stuff. We've got some follow-ups. Stick around here for more Force.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, we are back here on Force Center. It's our Q's of the Everything episode. Jennifer Linda there, Ken Napsok here. Joseph, of course, out chasing some wonderful artistic goals. We're really happy and proud of what he's doing right now. So we'll have updates on that when he comes back. We also want to acknowledge that this coming Friday, April 26th, 2 p.m. Pacific, will be the next Force Center live stream. We'll be hanging out with all of you, taking your questions, and maybe taking your predictions on how Bad Batch Season 3 and the series will end. There is a sub-question I was discussing this weekend with some friends, Jen, of the Bad Batch death pool. And that's dark humor at best. I think my early prediction is less deaths coming our way than I would have thought at the start of this season.
I would. Oh, gosh. I didn't even think about that. I think I thought that earlier on in the season, but now that we're getting closer, it feels too real. I want them all to survive.
Yeah, I've come to the thought here. Well, this is a teaser for maybe conversations on Friday's live stream. I've come to the thought that after this season's played out, that it's either all die, maybe outside of Omega, or no one dies. That one more death. We've already got Tech. They seem to have doubled down on that was an actual death. We'll see. We have two episodes left if there's any kind of Tech 2.0, all that kind of stuff. But it just doesn't seem that way now, which I'm okay with. That, you know what I mean? Like it's just having one more go is just a nick we don't need at the end of an emotional series.
Yeah. If anything, I'll bet on Crosshair. I'll bet on Crosshair. He'll have a heroic death. That's what I'll put my money on.
That's my leader in the clubhouse if I do have to take a death. And I'm not advocating for all of them other, again, outside of Omega and Batcher. They can, and maybe Gonki, but Wrecker, Crosshair, Hunter, if they all die, it just, to me, almost works more as a group or not a group at this point. But I think we're going to see a lot of life at the end of the series. All right, let's get to this question here from 8984M. Raise his hand, starts the question. Hello, Ms. Landa, Mr. Scrimshaw, and Mr. Knapsack. I have a question or questions. This Gen Zer has had many a laugh and been made to watch network TV again by my current fave sitcom, Abbott Elementary. I was wondering what were some of y'all's favorite sitcoms and sitcom moments. What to you are the importance of sitcoms for every generation, and what of the future of sitcoms? Well, interesting conversation starting point. I'll start with this, Jed. I've never seen it. I know of Abbott Elementary. I know it's very popular and very well done. Haven't seen a second of it other than commercials. You, what's your Abbott Elementary check-in?
I've seen it. I've seen a couple episodes. I really, really like it. It's really funny. But that's about as far. I've only watched a couple episodes. Okay. It's so hard, which we'll talk about. Why?
Yeah, part of that is, I know Abbott's probably on streaming, but isn't it mostly ABC based, right? It's still kind of network.
Yeah.
And for me, that kind of doesn't exist anymore.
Me too.
And again, I know you can find it other spots, I'm sure, but like, I have this, it's just out of my rotation, network television.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's that. But what, this is a great question. The history of the sitcom is pretty fascinating. There's some great pop culture docs out there. You and I both came of age during a second classic age of the sitcom, the 80s into the early 90s. And I was all in back then. What was your relationship with sitcoms growing up?
Obsessed. And looking at my list, for some reason, I liked older. It was like all older women. So Murphy Brown was a favorite of mine as a kid. Designing Women, Golden Girls, Empty Nest. Does anyone remember that show?
Empty Nest. Yes. Oh, my God.
Like, what's up with that? Of course, you know, like Perfect Strangers and all those other shows that were of that time. But there were just so many.
Yeah, absolutely. And I grew up, you know, probably watching the more, I don't even kid centric, kid focused, but like Different Strokes, Silver Spoon. Yeah. So like that was my big introduction into sitcoms. And I became a Cheers fan. I love Cheers. I think it absolutely has its earned place in television history. The pilot is perfection. Season one is perfection. It just gets better. It was also did the impossible and survived the big cast change at the top. Absolutely love it. And it's look, I always run at it. It's hard to, you know, with where we ended up with Bill Cosby, the human, but the Cosby Show, it's one of those earth shattering changes of a show. I remember watching the first episode and them, you know,
me too,
flushing the goldfish down the toilet, whatever it was, everything changed after. And that was, I was part of that generation too. So, the messy reality is there, but the truth of what it was at the time was strong for me as well.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I wasn't allowed to watch Cheers until later in life.
Oh, did you watch it with your parents?
Well, they were like, no. You can't.
No.
Sexual situations in a bar, you're out. Go to bed.
Right. I don't know how my parents, I think I just would kind of hang out behind them and like watch it. I don't even think that they knew that I was there watching some of these shows.
Yeah. And then in the 90s, I was a big, you know, by that time, you know, I not only older, but wanted to, you know, get into comedy, wanted to get into writing. I know you were maybe looking towards acting, performing. Like then my relationship with sitcoms was more of like, I loved that. Like I was a big fan of Frasier.
Big fan of
a lot of the NBC lineup. Never a huge fan of Friends, which we can talk about if you want. But I was like more. It was more like studying and whatnot, and how to put this together, and having sitcom ideas myself. And that was a different relationship with it. But that was kind of it, though. Then the sitcom disappeared for me.
Yeah. After that. Yeah. I mean, for me, Seinfeld completely changed everything for me and for a generation, right? Mm-hmm. It like changed the humor so much so that you can just say like little catchphrases like no soup for you or top of the muffin to you, right? These things, the little minutiae of the everyday became hilarious and a shared experience for all of us, which I think is why sitcoms were and are important, because it does create this kind of like collective funny moments that we can, these shared experiences. Oh, do you remember that? Like you're talking about the Cosby Show. I remember the first time I watched the Cosby Show and how impactful that was. Yep. And now with streaming and YouTube and TikTok and all these things, which are great, but it just means that there's less of a collective sense of, you know, comedy.
You're right. Like, was it Seinfeld was Thursday night, right? Part of the Thursday night lineup, 9 p.m. Yeah. I mean, but again, the fact that you and I are talking in terms of time slots, you knew what an 8 o'clock show was. You knew the 8:30. They could never find the right show to go from 8, which used to be Cosby. And then became, you know, I forget during the 90s run. But then, you know, it was like Seinfeld was 9 o'clock and you had an 8, you had an 8:30 and a 9 and 9:30. And how could you get there? And I think Friends eventually comes in there. And does the transition into Seinfeld, but then becomes the 9 o'clock. Like all that speaks to the Friday morning after, where you are, you and your friends, that's what you did the night before.
Yes.
And it was a different feeling. Just doing the lines, oh my God. And that it just kind of grew. And I don't know, we will not know if something like Abbott Elementary, definitely award-winning, funny. I'm not doubting that at all, but like, we don't know to the legendary level it could have been back then if we were all talking about it Friday morning.
Right. And really on the cusp would be like The Office and Parks and Rec, which I feel kind of like people definitely can quote that show or have specific memories from those shows. Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of like after that point, because some of the seasons were long, like I don't know a lot of those references. I know the characters, but the specific episodes is not like. Like for me, Seinfeld, or even like TGI. Remember TGI Friday?
TGIF,
right? Which was like appointment television for kids, Family Matters. What were the other shows?
By then I was watching baseball. Yeah,
I guess I had a younger sister, so she was all about TGIF.
Yeah,
and you know, where kids had that time where they would go and sit and just, you know, basically binge.
Yeah.
Back to back shows.
Now, a lot of this question also is about the future of sitcoms and where we're at. And like I said, it changes and there's interesting docs out there. Definitely not a sitcom expert there. But for me, I never went back to the format. And I think the format is interesting and valuable. The three camera shoot, generally done in front of a live audience, all that kind of good stuff. They've brought it back. There's sitcoms still going strong and there were. But like by the mid 2000s, you know, the British Office changed the game for me. And I do. You know, categorize even like a single camera, The Office, the American version, definitely sitcom, I would say, in terms of overall feel. But like, I'm wearing the shirt for those watching. It's the Birds of Prey. Once Always Sunny in Philadelphia came up for me in 2005, changed the game. I did not want to go back to anything that wasn't like that. Not just the style of humor, but just the presentation. It's a sitcom vibe. It's a home location, the bar, the cast and crew are generally the same, and it's their adventures every week. Often they connect. There's a lore in the show, but it's its own thing. I never saw I despise, and I don't want to take away the joy of anyone who loves the show, but despise Big Bang Theory. Despise the corporate nerd poking fun at the nerds thing that was. So I never went back after the mid-2000s to that style.
Mm-hmm. That primarily, I feel like a lot of those shows were on CBS, which seems to kind of cater to an older audience. Mm-hmm. It felt very shticky. It felt very canned. Those, that type of comedy, especially like when you're talking about, I forgot, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It felt so fresh and new and scrappy, which I think we just naturally kind of gravitate towards, and unpredictable. And that's the thing about like the single camera. It just feels a little bit more like anything can happen. It feels more like you're a fly on the wall observing these humorous moments, as opposed to the live studio audience laughing, or you get, I sometimes get stuck on like one person's weird laugh in the audience. Right. So it just doesn't have that same vibe.
Yeah. And again, it's not that saying that you can't find that again. They have tried in many ways, but I think a lot of my relationship with those kind of sitcoms changed. Coming out of my time in the Groundlings in 2003, I was really trying to get into sitcom writing or comedy writing, working on spec scripts and stuff for some of my friends from my Groundlings classes. And I remember the sitcom According to Jim Belushi.
Oh, yeah.
We were working on spec scripts for that because we had an in to maybe get on the writing staff with that. And the format just broke me on having any interest in it. It just wasn't particularly creative. It truly was a plug and play format. Jim says this, you got to know the characters. You got to be good and it's got to be funny. But like, I just lost all interest in it as an art form at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think maybe, you know, comedy changes, humor changes. And now what kids find funny, oh my gosh, my daughter will show me. I'm like, oh gosh, that's really, I've seen that before. Like, it's just not funny to me what they find funny.
This has turned into grumpy other center about entertainment. No, but like I think there's a lot of wonderful people doing little short sketches and stuff from Vine days to TikTok.
Yes.
I see a lot of them. I'm like, I wouldn't dare put that hacky of a premise into the world, but it's got millions of views. I've lived this. We've all seen, we've all told this joke for 40 years, but it's new again. So I can't, they're doing it. I'm not, you know, so I have to have that, but yeah, I'm with you. There's a weird relationship, and I think it's because we're a TV generation for
yeah,
absolutely. Acting can be very compartmentalized once you're out there. You have single camera experiences versus three camera. Have you done the sitcom route?
Yeah, I was on a Fox sitcom pilot. It never got picked up. Mm. But it was a single camera. And so it felt very much more natural. I can't imagine. I guess it would feel more like theater if you're going to do in front of a live audience with the three cameras and, you know, them changing out jokes that's what I've heard, like, you know, between takes and stuff like that. Yeah. It does feel more mechanical, less organic. I mean, you're still like, obviously in a single camera, you're still hitting your marks. You still have to say the lines, but it just feels a little bit more natural because the camera is just kind of like there following you. You're not like playing to an audience or something.
And Abbott Elementary is single camera though, right?
It is single camera. So. And it feels more like a, I don't want to say a mockumentary, but kind of does feel like that style, which I love.
Yeah. And I like that. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that there. And I was going to say, what are the importance of sitcoms for every generation? But, I guess you'll find out in a couple of years when your daughters get a little older and are flipping TV on their own. The future of the sitcom does seem, I don't know. We're in a weird spot with streaming in the future of television.
I'll tell you what I was just thinking about. I need to do. I need to show my girls I Love Lucy, Mary Tyler Moore show, because for me, those shows were formative and they helped me like understand comedy. And it's even like the live audience actually works, which I don't even know if it was technically live audience with I Love Lucy, but just like it feels like you're a part of this moment. And it's just so wild, the things that both of those characters were doing. I think it's important. But in terms of like new comedies, I can't imagine.
We'll see. This is a great question. 8948 8984. A lot of numbers for me on a Monday morning. but because I'm glad a show like Abbott Elementary exists, and I'm glad people like it. I'm glad, I think it does have its place, that weekly gathering of entertainment in comedy is important. It was important to us. And as far as favorite moments and everything, I don't know. Some of the great, the Seinfeld ones almost every week, like you said, every week had a catchphrase, every week had something going on. But yes, the ending of Cheers was was crazy big. Crazy big. And I love the last line. I love the last episode of Cheers. But you know, you had Bob Costas hosting like a live special for you. You had the cast drunk on Leno afterwards. Like,
right.
It was a watershed moment, you know?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. It feels like the days of the comedy kind of reigning are, I don't want to say they're over, but certainly now, like the superhero genre, the fantasy genre, like that type of appointment television, must-see TV has been Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon and Walking Dead and these much more dramatic, serious shows. I can't think of, I mean, even Abbott Elementary, which is incredibly huge, it doesn't have that same kind of like must-see TV that it feels like a water cooler type of show.
We're literally told must-see TV, the NBC marketing block there. Final throw. I'll throw this one at you here, Jen, on the fly. We've talked, there's been talk and questions before about Star Wars and comedy and everything. I'm not suggesting there should be a Star Wars sitcom, but you look over in Star Trek, like the Lower Decks animated series, there's other kind of things out there. Star Wars has, you know, the Lego Adventures, Young Jedi Adventures, but that's clearly, we're clearly going younger. I don't, oddly enough, have a desire to see a animated Star Wars series or a live action Star Wars series that is a Lower Decks kind of thing. But it might be possible. It could be out there. It'd be a big shift and big swing. But what's your thoughts on it? You want a Star Wars sitcom?
I mean, I would love it, but I don't think it will work. And I don't think the fans will embrace it because as Star Wars fans, we take things very seriously with our fandom and we want to know all the minutia and the details and what alien is this and is this canon, right? You'd have to let all of that go to be able to embrace. Although, you know what I think of? Do you remember Star Wars Detours? Remember that show? Well,
that we never really saw, right?
right. I saw a teaser and it was really funny. It was, but it poked fun at itself, right?
Well, and the robot chicken of it all, too. Back, you know, Lucasfilm used to do more, be okay with that licensing. I think under the Disney era, that's one of the big shifts. It is protective to, at times, a fault, possibly.
Yes, exactly. It was very irreverent and you know, I don't think that would fly in this era.
This is, I'd love to get, we'll have to follow up with Joseph here too on where that, some of that comes from. It's Muppet Babies was some of my favorite Star Wars growing up when they did the Star Wars episodes.
Yes.
Star Wars on the Muppet Show. You did your Jedi beat on the weird, wild, kind of kookier side of Star Wars. Not all of it was licensed where people where Star Wars appeared.
Right.
But there's that, but there is a dividing line, and I'm just wondering, Star Trek being TV first, the movies are definitely powerful. I'm a fan of the movies, fan of some of the stuff in the shows. I've just never grown up a big Star Trek fan, but I love it and respect it from afar. But I think you're, because it began in a weekly format, a long-running, full, old-school 22, 26 episode season with Deep Space Nine and Next Generation, all that stuff, that maybe that means Star Trek fans are more open to, and I know they got their own issues in some of the fringes of the fandom now. Every fandom does, but again, the Lower Decks of it all, and Prodigy is the other one. Yeah, that show. Like, I don't know. It just seems like they're more okay to those kind of formats where Star Wars being epic movie stuff first. We even see kind of the struggle at times with the TV show, at least the reception of the TV shows on Disney Plus, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. It does. I don't know why that is. And I don't want to insult my Star Trek fans. It feels like Star Trek, starting with TV, when I watched it, or my husband, who also loves Star Trek, like it just felt, I don't want to say kitschier, but it didn't, like you're saying, it didn't feel as epic or I don't know. It just felt a little bit more niche in some sense, even though it wasn't.
It wasn't, but it's a product of its time. What, 3-4 seasons during, the whiz bang, pow zoom 60s, and they hit big things. Obviously, big social issues and stuff played out on that show. But I remember it more as weird, almost H&R Puffin stuff monsters in Vasquez Rocks, as I would come to find out later, not too far from where we live. But whereas, then it catches up. I do think, Wrath of Khan's a great film. I love Star Trek VI Undiscovered Country. The comedy of Star Trek IV is big on my life. Finally getting the pleasure to meet Kirk Thatcher, the punk on the bus in Star Trek IV. He's a wonderful and talented man. I was shy. I met him earlier this year. Finally, a lot of friends know him. And I was just like, oh, my God, you're the punk on the bus. And he's like, yes, I am. all that matters is so Star Trek did kind of reach those higher levels. And this isn't like a negative. Like, I love the, like, no. I know fans of Lower Decks. And I almost wonder, all this leads to this, like with Skeleton Crew coming up in the fall. By all accounts, it's going to be not a sitcom, not a comedy, but it's going to be kid-based, Goonies-like, more, Imagine Entertainment 80s vibes. And
right.
Oddly enough, I just think there will end up being that natural pushback. And maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I should be hopeful because I'm hearing great things about it. But that's the closest we might get to a different kind of style presented in the Star Wars world. And we'll see.
You think that there's going to be pushback?
I mean, look, there always is, right? But
yeah, right, right.
I think of those George Lucas interviews that pop up all the time, as you know. There was one recently I was watching. I forget the era. It might be after Revenge of the Sith. It might be the post-prequel era. I don't think it was post-sale. But he was just like, yeah, you know, here's the thing. Most of the Star Wars fans don't like Star Wars when it's funny and sillier or not for kids. They want it to be, you know, I'm paraphrasing George, but they want it to be badass. Mm-hmm, and that plagued a lot of it, especially, yes. You know, and again, you could look at it as George looking back at the prequels and saying, hey, you know, either you didn't get it or I took a misstep, but I'm going to kind of, you know, stand behind what I did. But I'm in that ballpark too, you know, Jar Jar stepping in duty and all the stuff didn't hit early on. I value it more and value the themes behind it more. But so I think he's right. And I don't, and it is a bit of a frustration. And I think we'll come to head a little bit with the Skeleton Crew, which is clearly aimed for younger audiences.
It is, but I'm hoping that older audiences will be able to appreciate maybe some nostalgia that's kind of baked into mm-hmm. it, because it is kind of that, you know, Spielberg-esque yep. type of style. So I don't know.
I'm going to choose hope. And the footage we saw at Celebration London was wonderful. Just absolutely wonderful.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and the strike delayed it, obviously. And like I said, I was saying a couple weeks ago, I was having some dinner with some folks who had seen it. And one of them said, absolutely the best thing they've ever done on TV so far. So we'll see.
Oh, I can't wait. And when is it coming out?
The rumors are November. Like that was
okay.
Kind of where we're looking at. It makes a lot of sense, it being delayed as it was for a year. So I don't know. From sitcoms to Skeleton Crew, tying it to Star Wars. We'll see. And if this works, maybe we'll get that Star Wars workplace comedy.
Oh.
shot in front of a live studio audience.
Oh, gosh. Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. All right. And I do want to shout out, you know, I was thinking about it. We should... Matt the Radar Tech, Kylo Ren, undercover boss on SNL all those years. And shout out to Bobby Moynihan, who's just a wonderful human being, and Mikey Day, who I used to work with the Groundlings, and Taryn Killam, big Star Wars fans. And they did a lot of that content in that era that was a loving tribute to Star Wars and the fandom.
Hire them to do the sitcom.
God, that's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. I would trust it. I would be curious and trust it. Yeah. Final couple questions here. Zach Martin asks this question. Says, easy yes or no question for Ken specifically. Oh, boy. Will we ever get a second updated, including post-2019 stories version of why we love Star Wars? The Great Moments to Build a Galaxy Far, Far Away, the book I released in 2015 through Mango Publishing. The easy answer is no. No. the more complicated issue is, number one, my contract with them ran out. I had an exclusive for 5 years. Any book idea had to be pitched to them. I did pitch one. I pitched more of a Star Wars, what I called a Star Wars memoir. And that was, I should have used a different word because they rejected it based on the word memoir, which they say, hey, doesn't sell well. And I wasn't should have tried to explain. There was one of my favorite musical artists is Liz Phair. Right before the pandemic, she released Horror Stories, which was her quote unquote memoir. And you thought you were going to get here's the day I was in studio and recorded Supernova. Here's this. And I was on tour. It was not. It was stories. It was stories based on her life. And it was almost nothing to do with music. It was her divorce. It was an affair. It was a high school memory. It was a college memory. It was getting stranded in a snowstorm in New York. And it was these haunting, beautiful, some of her best work. I called it an album in a book form. And she liked that post. It was one of my great moments. And I wanted to do that for Star Wars, meaning it was a memoir of my life as a Star Wars fan. But I wanted to talk about seeing Return of the Jedi and staring up to the stars after I drove home in the back of my parents' car. I wanted to talk about seeing Phantom Menace with my then best friend who drove down to L.A. to see it with me and who has since died. And that's one of the only memories I have left of him. I wanted to talk about that. And it didn't go. They didn't like the pitch. So I understood why. As far as doing a direct follow-up or an updated version, they never approached me about it. At one point, around the time that I pitched this memoir thing, Mandalorian Season 1 had been out. And they said, we'd love you to do one on the Disney Plus stuff. But at the time, it was only Mandalorian. We knew stuff was coming, but it was like, well, I'm not going to do another. We'll be in the same boat again. And I do, maybe sometimes to a fault, like to do different things. I get bored easily of certain formats and styles. And I wanted to not just do what I had done before. Then my time, the 5 years has run out. So who knows? Maybe I'll pitch it again. I hate to bring in the business of it, but the reality is it takes it a massive amount of time. And I would not call getting a book published a financial windfall.
Right.
So as you kind of look at your life and where do you want to put your time and energy and what are you going to get back so you can live and survive? This is our career. There's some realities there too as well. So I hate to have a downer of an answer, but there's some stuff. I still love the brand, the why we love Star Wars and finding those little moments that make us love it in a big way. I think some of that has been here, always been in how I talk about Star Wars, but it's been here in Force Center. The lessons from Little Leia, the Jar Jar Binks essay I did, all that kind of stuff. They're on the channel here and more could be on the way with that.
You're a great writer, so I hope that you could write something for Star Wars. Maybe Lucasfilm Publishing could reach out to you.
You know what? I got to tell you, I always thought, well, this is, you know, my friend Alicia Malone was the one who helped me get the deal with Mango Publishing. She put out two books with them, and she was like, you'll be so shocked at some of the opportunities that come from this. And I thought, oh, great. And I'm not saying that in terms of fame, money, fortune. Just like, oh, awesome, great, we'll see. And I'm so bad at marketing myself. I hardly mention the book even on this. I nothing came of it. So I just nothing came.
I know. It's like you write, you do the thing, you create the thing, but then you also now have to become the business person and pitch yourself and sell yourself. It's like, gosh,
especially on the book side. So.
Like I already did it. The work is done.
Yeah. The work is done.
Here you go.
The work is done.
Yeah.
Anyways, I didn't mean to turn the downer. I also appreciate Zach, the question. Appreciate you reading the book and I'm really proud of it there. A lot has changed since I put the book out. My view of Star Wars has gotten even deeper and more appreciative of the themes, just the way we discuss things on Force Center. I think I always have a love and joy, then a deep dive into the themes approach. But, you know, what's the thing that gets your fist pumping? Is it the blaster sounds? Is X-Wings putting, you know, locking S-foils into attack positions? But I think I would write differently on some topics that are in the book.
Mm.
In a good way. So, all right. We will toss. Okay. Yeah, we got it. Let's do this follow up here. Then we'll get
on
here. Okay. Joseph and I answered a question recently from Stephen Campbell. It was about Galaxy's Edge. It's a longer question, but you weren't on that episode and we did want to get some information from you. We wanted to get your thoughts. And Stephen wrote there, hello there, Force Center. I'm curious about your thoughts on Disney Parks Galaxy's Edge, particularly its theming and fixed point in the overall Star Wars canon. Disney first announced the theme land back in 2015. Most fans, including myself, were filled with excitement of the possibilities the land could offer. We soon learned that the air would be set on a planet never before seen in Star Wars. He does go on to talk in more detail about some of those changes. Final question is, as a Star Wars fan, does more tune to the land's overall story compared to the average park goer? Am I overthinking these changes? Because they have announced, and that was part of his question, that they're going to expand the timeline or the characters that have shown up. They've already done that with, you know, Grogu, Fennec Shand, and Ahsoka showing up, Boba Fett, Din Djarin. So did establishing a specific canon timeline for the park limit their creativity? Do you think Disney should break away from the timeline constraints, as someone who, has been in the tunnels at Disneyland, Jen?
Yeah.
We wanted to get your thoughts.
It's very, when they first announced Star Wars Land, I had a specific vision, as maybe you all did out there, that it was going to be like how their other lands are, Adventureland, Fantasyland, where that it's more about the theme. Right. Yeah, yeah. But within that, you might have in Fantasyland Dumbo and Peter Pan and Snow White. Mm-hmm. It's like all these mixture of things. Right. But that's all based around the rides. So with Star Wars Land, I kind of liked the idea of maybe having a bunch of different, you know, one for the prequel era, one for the sequel era, an area for the original trilogy. Right. But again, going back to the canon issue of it all, that would have been kind of weird. And I think I don't know how fans would have felt about having characters, you know, here's Padme, here's Kylo Ren. Like, it just kind of would have felt odd, I think. So I get why they did, you know, creating this new world, this own canon within this specific timeline. Great. Mm-hmm. Now, when you go to the land, it's incredible. The rides are awesome, but it's limited in my experience. And there's not a lot for kids to interact with or do, which is my biggest complaint. Or even like, I wanted to grab coffee. It was a cold day, it was raining. And all I could get was, you know, the blue milk smoothie. And I'm like, ugh, I just want to sit and have coffee and kind of take, give me some calf and let me enjoy the scenery. Let me people watch. And there's really no place besides like the Ronto, I'm calling the Ronto Wraps. What is it called? The Ronto Roasters? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Ronto Roasters. And even then, they've kind of changed some of the food names to more Earth names, I thought. Something we discussed recently, too. But yeah.
Yeah. And even there's not that many places to sit. There's not a lot of places to sit, which is another complaint I have.
Yeah.
But the land itself is awesome. Like, it's really cool looking, right? I would like more to do there rather than having to spend money. We did see the day that we went, we saw Chewie. I kind of wrangled him and got a picture. We saw Rey, but she never really came out. Maybe she already had. And we saw a droid. I think it was R2. So that was exciting. Oh, and Kylo Ren, he interacted with us. That was really exciting. So I think that aspect of it with the characters interacting with the guests is really fun.
Yeah.
I just want more of it.
You're echoing some of the stuff we talked about and how I was glad with the decision to remix what I'd said before. I was glad with the decision, but two was interesting. Locked in one day in time was great when I went there the first time. But I understand the desire to push forward and it just makes sense to bring other characters in. And I thought the land, the way they designed it, you could slide, you know, Princess Leia is here today because at this point in the timeline, she shows up. You could do that. And you made me think too of like, Star Wars fans, the hardcore Star Wars fans, we have a little bit of a canon affliction. You always think of it when they redid the Star Tours stuff and they're redoing it again. But I went there during that time, you know, and that's not in Galaxy's Edge. Obviously, it's in Tomorrowland. There was a canon, you know, you had Finn up on the screen, you had John Boyega up on the screen saying something, dudes. And I remember thinking, well, he wouldn't be here.
Yeah,
he's not in it. And it's like, right, obviously you shut up and just have fun, but like we always think of it. So I get why they took that big bet, but I'm with you. It's not just because I'm older. I like to sit down in Disneyland. I like to watch. Yeah. I like to experience the land.
Right. Have you ever been to Star Wars Night at Disneyland?
No, I have not. And we just missed one. I had 2017 in Orlando during Celebration, got to go the Hollywood lot part of whatever Disney World is. And they had, you know, it was a lot of Star Wars stuff. The First Order and Phasma was marching. It was great. But no, I haven't been to Star Wars Night at all. Even when the convention hit in 2022, I didn't head over.
I really feel like whatever they're doing in Star Wars Night, it looks incredible. And I think that they should take that and put that in Galaxy's Edge. A friend of mine saw like the modal nodes going by on a boat playing some music. I'm like, what? Yeah. They took a picture with an Ewok, like a person in a furry suit, I believe, as an Ewok.
Or
just an Ewok. That's what I want to see in Galaxy's Edge. I want the modal nodes going by. I want, you know, like how they have the Main Street Band. Great. Make the modal nose in Galaxy's Edge. Give me some Ewoks.
I love that.
Give me an Endor tree house or Bright Tree Village tree house, right? Like that okay. The kids can climb in, like Tarzan in Adventureland. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of ideas. I just need the money.
Disney and Anaheim just got the big agreement with the city, the local city government there. They're expanding. They're going to buy 3 more streets. They're saying the footprint of the park isn't going to grow, but it's going to change a lot of things inside. So maybe now's your time. You know, use your connections. Don't you have like a Princess Jasmine Forever card where you can just show up and say, hey, this is who I was, and this is who I am.
I wish. If only I was an Imagineer. But alas, I am not. I'm merely an ideas person.
Well, there you go. Well, appreciate your thoughts on that. Following up on a previous question there, that is it. We're out of here, Jen. We did it. We answered the cues of the everything. We have a lot coming this week. A review of Bad Batch, the live stream, more on the way. So stick around to get the updated information of what we're doing. You can follow us on social media at Force Center Pod. That includes Twitter/X, whatever you call it. Hive, if you're still there. Most people know. Threads as well. And Instagram, Facebook pages, Force Center Podcast. We're available in a lot of spots as a podcast. Just search, you'll find us. Merch is available. So if you're going to a Star Wars night or Galaxy's Edge, get some Force Center merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Vote now on that poll for the movie commentary. Follow me at Cadnapsock for updates on other things I do, including comedy. Any other future books, it's all there at cadnapsock.com. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
If you saw an Ewok in person at Star Wars Night, let me know. I'm on all the social media sites at Jennifer Landa or TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
Yeah, and even though he's here, we do want to remind you about Joseph Scrimshaw's stuff. You can follow him on social at Joseph Scrimshaw. And he's got his weekly blog, his email, it's not a Substack, but his is at... It's at buttondown.email/finishyourmonsters. It's his weekly look at him kind of exploring his path forward here as an artist and where he has been, but also, trying to say, hey, finish your monsters, get your art done, get to it. And it's wonderful stuff. And you can subscribe to it at buttondown.email/finishyourmonsters. All right. That is it. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.